We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
BlueWire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with a runway.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast around the Blue Wire Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. We have a special guest with us to discuss the Bulls. That's Matt, a.k.a. Your Friendly Bulls Blogger, the guy who does everything, is what your title used to be, at Bloggable. A legend in the game, and we are honored to have him on the podcast today. But before we get into the Bulls, I think we should talk about a few old Bulls showing out in a game we just all watched. The Knicks tying up their first-round series against the Hawks, 101-92. God, it feels dirty to root for the Knicks, doesn't it? But honestly, I'm getting sucked into it. I have been this entire second half of the season. Tom Thibodeau calling the shots 10 years after he first came to the Bulls and led them to the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Thibodeau totally resurrecting the Knicks, a team projected to be perhaps the worst team in the NBA coming into the season by the Las Vegas Lions. Instead, they get home court advantage in the playoffs with the 4 seed. Knicks looked like they were on life support in this game. I thought that, their season might be coming to what looked like a likely end. They were down double digits in the second quarter against Atlanta. They stormed back in the second half. Hawks couldn't make a shot. D. Rose just goes crazy, scores a game-high 26. Taj Gibson on the floor, closing it out. It was just like old times, guys. It was pretty incredible to watch that.
Yeah, and first of all, thanks for having me on again. Feels good to be back. And, yeah, I was also pretty blatantly rooting for the Knicks that whole game. And it looked like, especially, yeah, when they went down 10 in the second half, it was like maybe that story of, like, a Tibbs team underperforming in the playoffs was going to rear its ugly head again. But looking at, like, the roster he has, it's just even if it was, like, a playoff disappointment, it would just speak to, like, how good he is as a coach to get a team with that roster into that 4 seed, like, home court advantage in the Eastern Conference playoffs. It's pretty remarkable. I mean, you see at the end of the game, they got, like, retreads, not only Derrick Rose, his renaissance, but, you know, Reggie Bullock and Alec Burks are on the wings there. It's like they're picking off these guys up the scrap heap, and Tibbs has them balling out, and it's great that they got a win there because now it's a series, and so it looks like it's going to be a fun series.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Taj was like a plus 22. I looked at the box score. It was like basically like an old Bulls box score. D. Rose led the team in scoring with, I think, 26, 20, something like that. Taj was like a plus 22 off the bench, had offensive rebounds, had like 3 steals. I think he had a couple blocks. So just like throwing it back to the old Bulls days. And just like a similar kind of
nice
game.
Just
like
duck.
Yeah, dunk at the end.
But just like duck, Taj, yeah. Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, just the grind it out. Just like obviously low scoring game. It felt a lot like a fucking old Bulls game. So it's definitely been kind of nostalgic watching that. And so, I can't believe Taj is still playing so well. And obviously with Rose too, but I mean, Rose has had his moments the last couple of years. Like Taj, I feel like I thought he was like totally dead and like going to be out of the league. And what is he like 35, 36 now, but he's playing huge minutes and playing closing time for the Knicks.
Yeah. He was unsigned until after the new year and they picked him back up. So, yeah. Pretty remarkable. He's on the floor in crunch time in these games.
Yeah, I know.
It's just like, crazy. You know Thibodeau can trust him. Mitchell Robinson gets hurt. Noel gets elevated to starting center. They have an opportunity for someone to establish themselves as the backup center. You think Tibbs is going to play Obi Toppin over Taj Gibson? Taj could be 45 years old. Tibbs would still send him out there over a rookie. I honestly thought that they were going to try to bring back Joakim Noah at a point, too, but they already amnestied Noah. So has the team ever brought back someone they amnestied? I
don't know. I remember the Bulls brought back – I know the Bulls, like, waived Tim Thomas twice. They brought him – they waived him, and then like they bought out his contract, and then a couple years later they got him in another trade and then bought him out again. I remember that. But I don't know if they've ever, like, done, like, an amnesty – if there's been an amnesty casualty that's come back to the team. But, yeah, I mean, no – I mean, you could see, like, how Tibbs would, like, want Taj on the floor, obviously, and maybe even Noah, just guys who, like, knows what he wants to do on the floor, and that, like, supersedes, like, anything that Tibbs could ask for. I mean, as long as, like, you know what you're doing, if you're prepared and you play hard, that's, like, that's the Tibbs motto. That's, like, really what that's all it takes to get on the floor with him.
And it looks like Tibbs might have finally pulled the plug on Alfred Keith Bogans Payton tonight after playing five more ineffective minutes to start the game. D-Rose and Taj started the second half. I hope that Payton is done for this. Like, just don't play him anymore. But it's been just so hilarious. It's literally been, like, the same thing, even, like, crazy degree. Because I think last game it was 4 minutes to start each half, and that was it. Bogans would usually get to, like, 15, 16, maybe enough to, like, 18 minutes in those games. And, like, Payton's been even – it's just been even worse. Like I said, like, 4 or 5 minutes to start each half, and, like, that's it. That's been hilarious.
Bogans had, like, that magic line where it was, like, if he scored 6 points, the Bulls were, like, undefeated, and Alfred Payton can't get to that. So.
Yeah, he's
But I will say, just a quick shot, I think he would probably be the best point guard on the Bulls right now. Alfred Payton was on the team this year.
Well, that is a perfect segue. Let's talk about the Bulls now. Let's talk about our Chicago Bulls. Obviously, as everybody knows, they did not make the postseason. They did not make the play-in. They did not make the playoffs. Either way. Disappointing after the Vucevic trade. I think we were all excited. I mean, I know, Matt, you that they got aggressive. They made a move. We were asking for them to do something, try to commit to something, and they did it. They made that big trade. They made the other one to get Daniel Theis and Troy Brown Jr. and all that. But then for all the reasons that we've talked about ad nauseum on this pod, they didn't make it and all that. So I guess just in general off the start, where is your head at with this team, with that trade? Do you still like it? Has anything shifted for you after them, after they kind of blew their opportunity to get in the postseason?
Yeah. Well, I think, like, watching the playoffs, especially, like, that raucous, like, New York crowd. I mean, I don't think there's any shame in, like, quote unquote, like, going for the 4 seed or, like, going for mediocrity. I think it would be awesome if the Bulls were mediocre right now and they were in a playoff game. Like, that would be, like, thrilling to watch playoff Bulls basketball now, as opposed to what we've seen the past few years after the Butler trade. So I applaud the sentiment of, like, going for it. So in that, like, it's fair to judge after the fact that they didn't make it. I mean, I know Vooch is signed for 2 more seasons, but part of that trade was, you know, let's get into the play-in mix now to try and get some momentum heading into the offseason of, like, making the Bulls a destination free agent place to go to. So the fact that it didn't happen, I mean – it's definitely a negative part of the trade, and it also bumps up the trade package that we sent to Orlando, because now they have the 8th pick potentially, as opposed to, like, a out of the lottery pick if the Bulls made the playoffs. So, I mean, it just, like, stinks all around. But I still get the motivation for it. I'm still was happy they did it at the time, but it's definitely, I mean, we don't, I mean, making these trades is not, like, about, like, pleasing blog boys on the trade deadline. It's about, you know, actually, like, achieving results. And they didn't make the play-in. That's a failure beyond any other, like, measure. So it was still, like, a good idea to do the trade, but so far it's not worked out. I don't think there's any debate about that. Now we'll see. I still think there is, like, good feelings about the team going to this offseason. I think a lot of, like, what we wanted to see heading into, like, the Karnisovas era was just getting the perception of the Bulls, like, better around the league, so that players would actually want to come and play here. I think in getting Vucevic and Zach LaVine's elevation, like, even though they didn't make the playoffs, they're not, like, in the national conversation now, I still think they're seen as a better situation than if they didn't acquire Vucevic and also still didn't make the play-in, or if they went turned the other way and started trading off guys and, you know, even trading LaVine potentially and tanking. So I think it's a better path than that, but it's still a disappointment that they didn't make it this year because, I mean, now, like, the pressure is, like, even more so to do it next year, and hopefully that this, like, lack of making the playoffs this year didn't hurt them in terms of player acquisition.
Yeah, we spent so much time talking about the Knicks at the start of the podcast, but the team that the Bulls really try to copy going into next season is the Hawks. And I guess LaVine is Trae Young in this scenario. The Hawks traded for Capella, but then he didn't play at all, debuted this year, maybe somewhat similar to Vucevic, totally different types of players, but roughly maybe the same level of productivity. And then the Hawks had this young core that they meant to grow around Trae with Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, so many other guys. And then they were like, actually, what we're going to do is go get a bunch of veterans. Let's get Gallo. Let's get Bogdanovich.
Let's get Chris Dunn.
Tony Snell for some reason, too. So, you know, they reloaded in the offseason. They had a lot of cap space. They made a lot of moves. And, you know, jumped up to the number five seed in the conference. If the Bulls could follow that path next year, that would be super dope. I think we can all agree on that. The problem with that, this, though, is that the Bulls, I feel like, have sort of limited avenues for how to go about acquiring significantly better players. For one, it's not a very good free agent class. For two, they don't have all that much cap space, especially after taking Al-Farouq Aminu, his $10 million contract, which is an expiring deal heading into this next season. But, you know, if you want to be a cap space team, that is a pretty big hindrance on what you could do in terms of going after free agents. Their asset package for trades is limited after they deal two picks for Vucevic. And all of the existing young players on the team might not be any good. I think we're all relatively high on Patrick Williams. We could probably get into Patrick Williams a little bit later. He's probably their most enticing trade chip. You also have Coby White. I mean, Markkanen is like might not be worth anything at this point. We've never known what Lauri Markkanen's trade value exactly is. We've discussed it ad nauseum for 4 years, but it certainly feels like it's at the lowest point it's ever been, if nothing else. So just sort of going into this offseason, like, what is a good realistic expectation for what the Bulls can do, given that, you know, they don't have all that much? Your favorite word, Matt, I got to say it, flexibility.
Yeah. It's part of this Vooch trade is like not only that they like failed to make the postseason, but now they've kind of like the opportunity cost of having these assets for someone else, someone better potentially, that's gone. Like they used their picks, they used two picks and they can't trade the 22 pick because of the Stepien rule. So those are out. They, you know, Wendell Carter's gone as a potential trade ship. And yeah, so now they're, and they ate into so much cap space with Vucevic's contract and taking in Aminu, which is kind of like a under-discussed, like underrated part of that trade as a negative for the Bulls that they had to take they didn't have to take that Aminu contract. That was like a negotiation by the Magic to say, hey, like we're giving you Vucevic, you have to also take this expiring contract. So that makes the deal look a little bit worse, and it does impact their cap space because as you mentioned, the Hawks, because Trae Young was on a rookie contract. They were able to generate more cap space. And, you know, in terms of, like, the free agent class, you know, Bogdanovich and Gallinari are not – would be, like, mid-level free agents. Not for the mid-level exception, but they would be out of that top tier of free agents in this class too. So it's not really fair to say, like, well, the Bulls can't get, like, a top free agent because those guys weren't top free agents either. But they don't have the avenues in terms of cap space to get – like, to sign those guys outright. So, yeah, it's difficult, and I'm kind of, like, hoping – well, I was going into this trade deadline with, like, extremely low expectations because I thought Karnisovas, like, really botched his first offseason in basically doing nothing besides signing Garrett Temple and, like, declaring that this was, like, an evaluation season. I thought that was, like, totally the wrong move. And not only from, like, a lack of ambition standpoint, but I think it also hurt the team on the court not to get, like, a real point guard. And I think we're seeing that with, like, we could talk about this later, but, like, seeing how, like, Daniel Gafford's flourished in Washington with a real point guard, like, how the lack of point guard play in the Bulls has kind of hurt, like, some of their trade assets. But I'm hoping, like, well, they totally surprised me at the trade deadline by going balls out for Vucevic. So maybe they could make it happen in this offseason, even with not, like, max cap space. Hopefully this team turns into, like, the Miami Heat almost, where like they don't even care if they have cap space. They just get a guy and say like, this guy's coming here, and then they work it out.
Sign and trade.
So I'm kind of hoping. Yeah, like through a sign trade, we can use Lauri Markkanen. I don't think Markkanen has any value outside of his outgoing salary really at this point, because if a team is trading for Markkanen, they're not only getting him as the player, they're getting him at his market rate, which will be, who knows, maybe over $15 million a season. So it's kind of just like – it's kind of like hoping and praying that they can get this kind of like big splash in the offseason, because yeah, if you look at it from like a practical sense, it'll be tough. Karnisov like shot his best shot like at the trade deadline, and so now it's like going to be even harder. And I think like looking at all these playoff teams, it just shows how the Bulls, like while they have Vucevic and LaVine, I mean they still need so many more pieces. They have such a like lack of talent up and down the roster. They haven't developed the back end of the roster, so they don't really have any like young prospects that can potentially soak up minutes. You know, we mentioned Markkanen is probably gone. Kobe White's been middling, but they need like three wings probably this offseason to round out the rotation. I mean, it's gonna be tough to get like that many pieces, or to get like one big piece and try to fill in the rest with minimums. It's gonna be difficult. So I guess my expectations are. They're low, but they were also low heading into the trade deadline, and they surprised me. So I'm kind of like hoping I get surprised with like a big move in this offseason.
Are there any names that have crossed your mind if they do try to make a big move? I mean, we've talked about Kyle Lowry. I think we've talked about like Conley. We've talked about if the Pacers blow things up, if they can. I don't know if they have the assets to trade for Malcolm Brogdon. But I mean, with just the point guard stuff. I mean, you talk about the Bulls did not have a good point guard. They did not address point guard. They had Kobe, Sato. And fucking Ryan Arcidiacono. Yeah. Clearly, they could use a point guard upgrade. So, anybody that you think that they should go after, try to make a big move like that with a point guard?
Yeah, I'm hoping that they're not tied to this. Like, we have to like keep like a young timeline. And I think with the acquisition of Vucevic that he's 30, I don't think they are thinking that. Yeah. So I think go after Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley. Pay outright for an unrestricted free agent who might be on the older side, but you don't really have like it's not like this team has like some championship timeline that we have to align with. They just need to get like solid lead guard play to help the rest of the team. But also they need wing play too. So it's difficult to know like what to prioritize. I don't know like the top wings out in the free agent market, but maybe it turns out that the Bulls make their big acquisition by trade. They can, you know, they don't have a lot of outright cap space, but Aminu making $10 million, Thad Young $14 million, Satoransky at $10 million, Troy Brown $5 million. They have lots of, like, tradable contracts that they can package and maybe take on a guy who's making long-term money that a team will just be happy to get rid of for expiring deals. Like, that's possible that they can – and I haven't, like, looked around to see, like, who could they possibly get. And I think we know, like, it's actually kind of early thinking about the offseason because so much can change in the playoffs. Like maybe the Clippers flame out and all of a sudden like Paul George or Kawhi Leonard are on the table and in terms of someone like even conceivably gettable. So I think like those avenues can open, and that's part of the reason why it was such a big risk to make this deadline deal for Vucevic, because it's always better to make these deals like before the season. They've had this like excuse since the Vucevic deal about the lack of practice time and how it discombobulated the roster. Well, okay, I mean maybe there's something to that. I think they've leaned on that a little bit too much, especially considering they also like to tout how great Billy Donovan is. So like why couldn't he overcome this like roster reconstruction in the middle of the season to get to the 10th seed of the like worst conference?
JV conference.
Yeah, it's like a pretty like meager goal, but I think. Going into this offseason, like, okay, well, then make your big splash now, and then you have, like, a full training camp and preseason, and you can move forward. So I don't really have any – like, the free agent names are out there, but I think there could be names that we don't even think of now that pop up later in the offseason.
Yeah, I guess you talked a lot about the point guard need, and this can just be a general discussion. You did hint at it briefly already, but, like – do you think the bigger priority should be point guard or wing, or just the likely answer, I guess, is best available talent is probably what they need. And when they acquired Vucevic, it seemed pretty obvious to me that, like, now the goal is just to get a third star. What sucks about how this season played out is that, you know, even if they were to get a third star, they need to really, like, develop the end of the bench. And what they did this year should have been totally fucking unacceptable, quite frankly. Keeping Felicio on the team, keeping Denzel on the team, keeping Archie Diacono on the team. Are either of those three guys going to get an NBA contract going into next season? I think that's a major question mark. You know, I would have loved to see Devin Dotson just get a chance to see if you have something there. They decided not to do that. So I do think it's going to be fascinating just beyond, like, what they do with their big move. As you mentioned, they need five guys, probably, five new guys this offseason at minimum.
Yeah, so I was harping on that, like, all season, like, how they were refusing to address the back of the bench, like, even, like, when they were going into the season with these guys.
Last offseason, we were complaining about.
Right. It was just like this, like, just because they were under contract and they were taking a roster spot, that made it, like, they were locked in. Like, there was no, it was just, like, thought of as, like, there was no way that they would release them and just eat the money and sign new guys just to try them out. So they could have gone multiple, and especially after the deadline when they were, okay, now we're going for the playoffs. Why didn't they sign, like, a veteran player to help out when the inevitable happened, where they were actually pretty lucky when it came to COVID and injury absences. And then LaVine goes down for 2 weeks, and then there's other injuries with Garrett Temple, and all of a sudden you have to play these guys at the end of the bench when you could have brought in someone who could, you know, soak up some minutes at, like, a capable veteran player. So they could have gone that route, or they could have gone the developmental route with, you know, and you could argue they already had those pieces in, like, Devin Dotson, and they just refused to play them. They didn't use their G League roster this year. That, I think they sent Dotson to the bubble, but they didn't have, like, their own team down there. So that's key not only for this season, but going into next year when we're talking about, like, potentially using cap space or using, like, the mid-level on one guy, and then you have to fill in all these other guys. Well, that's usually done through, you know, the back end coming up and, like, on these, like, rookie contracts, on these minimum contracts. And now instead you're going to have to – you don't know what you have. That's another old Paxton gem too. Like, they could legitimately say, like, we don't know what we have in Devin Dotson, so we don't know if he could be the third point guard for the minimum or, like, on a two-way deal. So it really – they really kind of complicated it further for themselves by not trying to do some roster churn to get some developmental pieces, like, in the pipeline. It was really a failure by Karnisovas, and you can't help but wonder, kind of similar to the Boylan fiasco, how he wasn't fired for 2 months. Like, is it because of Karnisovas not like operating properly, or because ownership is, like, tying his hands a bit? Neither answer is good, but I can't help but wonder, like, Karnisovas with this, like, scouting background, you know, a bunch of guys were signed out of Europe this year, including after the trade deadline. Like, why wasn't Karnisovas in on those guys? Maybe he was, and ownership told him, like, well, we're not adding any more payroll this year, and you can't even, like, at the minimum, we're not going to, like, pay Felicio to go away or Denzel or Archie Diacono, so you have to just, like, deal with the open roster spots you have, and they didn't have any. I don't know what's a better, like, cop out, if it's because ownership tied his hands or because Karnisovas, like, doesn't have the, they're not, like, at that level where they're, like, trying, where they're trying guys out. But it's not good. I mean, it's a minor thing relatively, but it all kind of adds up. And especially going into an off season where you need, like, five guys, it would be nice if you could say, like, okay, well, one of these guys is going to be, even like Javonte Green or something, like, it'll be him. We know we can count on him for rotation minutes next year, but we don't know if we can count on, like, any of these guys.
Right. Yeah. I like the Knicks signed some European guy. I know he's not playing this season, but, like, he's one that signed Mike James from, he was playing over in Europe. I mean, obviously they're the Nets. They're good.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Have people, guys will want to go there, but I mean, that's the Pacers. I think, when did they sign that?
Yeah, Shaver said he had a huge playing game. Yeah.
And I mean, he was really good for them to end the season. I mean, and like Austin Rivers, I think, is another name. Obviously, again, the Nuggets are good. So, I mean, it makes sense if he wants to go to a playoff team, but like, there are a lot of examples where, and I totally forgot, I was looking at like their salary cap thing the other day. They used their hat, like half their mid level on Garrett Temple. They did not use the rest of it, and they did not use their biannual exception this year. Like, that doesn't make any sense because they had a full roster with fucking Felicio eating up $8 million and Arch Diacono. Like, not using those exceptions when just in general, it's like, that's bad. It's a bad way to manage the rest
of it. Yeah, or even their, one of their two-way spots went to Anna Makoka, who was from the prior regime too. Like, they're probably just going to let him go and – no one will care, but it's like if they were just going to let him go, then why not let him go this year and get someone else in that two-way spot?
Yeah. I mean, we harped on it. You harped on it. I mean, just going back to the last offseason, just the lack of activity in general. Obviously, the fact that they made those trades helped kind of make up for that somewhat, but the lack of – I mean, the stuff on the fringes does matter, especially when you're trying to get from shitty as hell to at least mediocre. Like, I mean, maybe the end of the roster doesn't matter when you're like playing for a championship and you're,
I mean, especially if you're Carter Sovis and you come in and you hire guys and you tell the world like we're going to be a player development franchise. Okay, I mean, to me that kind of just says like we're going to be a cheap franchise. But if that's what you want to do, then like part of player development is not just your first round picks or your lottery picks. It's getting these guys like on free agency, the undrafted types, two way players, like trying to get some cheap prospects to fill in those rotation spots so that you can spend on the future and for bigger pieces. And part of it was also they thought they were a player development franchise by essentially gifting Kobe White and Patrick Williams starter roles and huge minutes. Well, that kind of like tanked the team. The more they played, the worse the Bulls were, and no fault of their own. I mean, it doesn't really mean anything in terms of them as like their future prospects. If you're a young player, you're good and playing a ton of minutes, you're probably going to be a bad team because with those minutes out there. So, I mean, to have that going into the season and basically saying like Kobe White's our starting point guard and we have no real capable like backup, like Satoransky's more like a wing backup, I would say, than a true point guard backup. To put all that on Kobe White and then call it like player development, not only did it hurt White, I think, as a player, I think it hurt like other members of the team because they didn't have capable point guard play. And then to like switch it halfway through the season to say, okay now we're a Vucevic and Levine team, like we're in our prime, we're going for it now. Kobe White, and even before the trade, Kobe White got sent to the bench and Thad Young played more and more. And it's like it was just very bizarre to have this, like, Karnatov has come in and say all this stuff about being, like, a young player development team, and then totally, and then, like, scrap that midway through his first season and say, okay, now we're going to be, like, a destination free agent. And I actually, like, prefer that is, like, you know, we're the Chicago Bulls. We shouldn't be, like trying to, like, slowly develop these guys into, like, a core that'll, like, you know, spend, like, 8 years with a team and, like, grow and make the playoffs. Like, let's get some all-stars in here and let's make the playoffs now. I'm fine with that, but it's bizarre that it was like a twist like midway through his first season. Yeah, part of it might be because Carter Sovis doesn't like to like show his hand, so maybe he was just lying when he said like he cared about player development. that much, but I think like his midseason trade coupled with not like developing the back end of the roster, there it just shows like a totally different ethos than what he said he was going to come in as. And he's hopefully a big game hunter, and he's going to like use this offseason to get like that third star, and that'd be great. If he gets it done, then that'd be fantastic.
I'm curious, like, how much it just had to do with, like, LaVine taking the leap and, like, being awesome in the first half. And, like, obviously with his unrestricted free agency coming up, they could offer extension stuff this offseason as well, which I was just going to segue into that. Just talk about Zach in general. He had an awesome season. Like, I know, and it was a bummer that he missed the 11 games with COVID, but, I mean, he was one of the best scorers in the league this year. So him, like, leveling up, the other guys just, but the lineup, like, still being bad, and him hit with his future maybe being in doubt. I do wonder if that kind of played into it as well. It's like, you know, like we need to get a guy who can help him win now. So I do wonder if that played a role in it. But I mean, I think I've come around a lot on Zach. I mean, a lot of the fan bases, he's always been fun. I mentioned like the extension stuff, and we've talked about, you wrote about it at Bloggable. They can offer him the base extension, which he's not taking. Just not, it's like 4 years, 105. They can use cap space to offer him like 30 some million a year, which maybe he would take it. I kind of still think he wants to go under free agency and get like a full max if possible. So it's just in general, your thoughts on Zach being, I mean, I guess he's still flawed, obviously, but Zach as like the number one guy on this team, still the leap he made, what you think they should do with him moving into the future, and if you think that they should keep him around long-term. I mean, obviously they're not trading him this offseason, definitely not asking stuff like that. They made the trade for Vooch. I think they're going to go see at least – we'll see what they do with the extension stuff, but I guess just Zach and his future and your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, certainly he made a leap. I've been a slow like believer in Zach as like a superstar as well. So I mean, and he proved me wrong, because every year he keeps improving. So it's like, you know, if he improved in his shot making, he improved a little bit as a defender and as a playmaker, and that's all you could ask for. It's like, if you keep poking holes in his game and he gets better at those holes you're poking, then, I mean, I can only expect that next year he's going to be better at those other areas where he's still deficient. It's kind of goofy to, like, get into, like, what makes, like, a one superstar, right, or a 1A. I mean, in terms of, like, the money he's going to make max money. I mean, there's just no way around that. So it's really just if you're going to pay him or if someone else is going to pay him that max, like he's going to get that money. And I think he's, even if he doesn't like round out his game fully, if he scores at this rate, and he kind of tailed off a little bit in the second half. And of course he sprained his ankle and then got the COVID diagnosis. So that didn't help, but so it's possible that first half of the season was just like, and like offense was up around the league. So it's kind of like grading on a curve that his scoring was, you know, the whole league was scoring more, so his scoring wasn't like as impressive like when judged against the entirety of the league. But it was still, I mean, if he improves off of that, I mean, then I mean he's already a fantastic player, and that just makes him like, of course you're gonna keep him and max him out and do everything like stuff like the Vucevic acquisition to make him happy, to keep him here. And maybe that was part of it, that Karstos didn't think he had a star. And then he realized midway through the season, oh yes, I do, and it's Zach LaVine. So I'm comfortable paying him that max, because I figure like that's the way he's going to get that money from the Bulls or someone else. And I'm kind of tired. I'm not going to like the choice of paying Zach LaVine $30 million or not having Zach LaVine on the team. Like that's
the Jimmy,
not a good
the Jimmy
choice.
Thing
not
kind
like
of all over.
The choice of, yeah. Right. Yeah, and we should, the Bulls should not be in the business of like letting talent walk like that. And I think at this point, you're not going to get like a good trade return for him in the final year of his contract. Maybe if you did in this offseason, but you're not. So then we're talking like next trade deadline, and it probably would be a limited trade market if you're trading Zach midseason. And then if you're trading Zach, you have to like trade Vucevic. I mean, like the whole thing like
you're blowing it up.
So I think they're keeping him. Yeah, they're keeping him. And I think from LaVine's perspective, yeah, it's maybe he takes a little bit less in terms of like he gets his max extension early. It's a 4-year deal instead of waiting a year and getting the 5-year max. You know, maybe he thinks deep down he can make like the All-NBA team and get a super max designation, and that's more percentage of the cap. So it's possible he doesn't want to take the early money. It's also a dicey proposition for the Bulls to even offer it, because to offer it, they have to get to like $14 million in cap space to offer it. Now to do that, they'd have to let pretty much everyone, all their unrestricted guys go, and that's no big loss, except like Daniel Tice. So you'd have to basically say he's gone. I think they could keep Satoransky, Thad Young, and then maybe like use them and Aminu's contract and maybe make trades. They could still sign and trade Markkanen, but what that precludes them from doing is using their free cap space in free agency. So you're no longer going to be able to sign a free agent outright if you use your cap space on LaVine. So there's like three paths. I know like Stefano did a good piece last week about like the two passables could go down, whether they want to be a cap space team, whether they want to operate as an over the cap team. The difference being, you know, if they operate as over the cap, that means they keep a lot of their guys and they have like some, like there's less guys that they have to get, because they'll have Thad Young in the fold. They'll have Satoransky in the fold. Those are just like fewer acquisitions that they have to make. But they do have a middle path, which would be if they keep all their veterans and then re-sign Zach LaVine, and then you have like a room exception, and then you could still do trades. That's not ideal. It'd probably be easier to make an acquisition, like even Lonzo Ball acquisition, if you have cap space versus being capped out and then just using like Lauri Markkanen and like some salary filler. So it's a tough proposition. I think what they'll probably do is that they will try to go. I mean, a lot of we know like in the NBA, a lot of this stuff is already being like discussed.
Yeah.
So they're going to know heading into free agency who might come there. So hopefully they, if someone is coming, then they will do everything to like generate, whether it's cap space or a trade package to get that player in. Now, if they can't get like a big name player, then maybe they go, okay, well, we'll try to get something done with Zach LaVine now. I don't think they're going to go into the offseason and like use their cap space right away for Zach LaVine and not have any cap space to fill out the rest of the team. But it would be, it's an interesting proposition for the Bulls to whether they want to make sure they lock up LaVine now or have that risk of LaVine walking. Honestly, if they commit to, if LaVine stays at this level or, you know, even gets better, I don't think it's going to be an issue to offer him a 5-year max.
Super max or whatever.
From a Bulls standpoint, and he's going to take that.
Yeah.
Because it'll be the most, it'll be more than any other team can offer. And it seems like he wants to play in Chicago, like Jimmy Butler did, to be honest. So, so really there isn't too much risk in letting Zach walk. He would walk if the season turns out to be a disaster, which would mean like a bunch of other stuff went wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway. So.
And in that case, maybe you're legit blowing it up. From
right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I guess we were talking about Kobe and Patrick Williams and the kind of the player development stuff. Let's turn to those two guys then. I guess just the Bulls young players. I think we all think Lowry is basically done here. So I think we want to focus on Kobe and Pat. I guess let's start with Kobe since he's been in the league a couple of years now. What do you think his future is with the Bulls in the NBA? Do you think he'll be the starting point guard? I mean, I think we talked about they need an upgrade. Do you think I think we've talked about a lot, obviously, that he's probably better as like a six-man gunner type, but I don't want to like cap his ceiling at that. He showed some improvement, I guess, towards the end of the year. I mean, he did that last year too, where like he all of a sudden caught fire at the end of last year, and this year he had a few good games as well. So I guess just, yeah, with Kobe, because he was real frustrating a lot of times this year. Obviously, he said that he got thrown in the fire. And then when he was benched, like right before the deadline, he was playing really poorly off the bench. And then he did start to play a little better when Zach was out. So really frustrating year. He showed some flashes, but, I mean, you want to obviously see him. He needs to be better if he's going to be a long-term cornerstone of this team. So where are you at on Kobe White?
I'll kind of throw it back to you guys because, I mean, you mentioned his improvement in the second half, and I've seen this, like, out there. I think Carter Sovis mentioned it. Billy Donovan might have mentioned it. And then, of course, like, Casey Johnson picked it up. And now it's just kind of, like, seen as just, like, established fact that Kobe White improved after the trade deadline. And I'm not so sure. I mean, I haven't looked at his numbers, and maybe they have improved. And he certainly got that starting job back. and that helped. But I mean, to me, like you were saying, like a lot of these games at the end of the season, these are like junk games where teams are either giving up or they're, you know, tanking for playoff position, or, you know, they have injuries and guys out. And I try not to like buy too much into any like individual performance in the last like group of games. But I think it does speak to the possibility that maybe Coby White's a better fit with Vucevic than he was on the team without Vucevic, because Vuce can like can take some of that playmaking burden off of the point guard. And so it's possible that like it's not even so much that whether Coby White's better starting or off on the bench. It's more, is Coby White better on the ball or off the ball? And I think like we want to say like, okay, well, if we get a point guard, then he's off the ball. But also he could play in lineups with LaVine and Vucevic and be off the ball more. And that might be how he's more unlocked to be effective. And that kind of does like bring into the offseason, like, so is point guard then that big of a concern? I mean, they obviously need a point guard as a backup at like bare minimum. But potentially they could go into next season with Coby White as the point guard, figuring that he's going to not be on the ball so much, with Vucevic like handling a lot in the post, and LaVine like expanding his playmaking, so to where, you know, maybe like obviously LaVine played worse earlier in the season, but maybe the acquisition of Vucevic is what unlocked him more than, you know, what I'm suspecting, where it's just like end of the season like junk ball that made him better.
Ricky, yeah, your thoughts on that? We've talked about that. Yeah, Ricky, go ahead.
He did hit 41% of his threes in May on 9 attempts per game. So yeah. I kind of think that that's sort of the vision for him, is just being a super high-volume three-point shooter. And I think I've said this a couple times on the show, but, like, one thing I've noticed this year is that NBA basketball, the three-point volume just, like, overwhelms everything else. Like, if you can't get up threes at a super high clip and knock them down at a high clip, you're playing at such a disadvantage in today's NBA. And, you know, you mentioned offenses being up around the league. I think a stat I saw is that last season the Mavericks posted the most efficient offensive rating of all time, and this year six teams topped that mark. So it just shows, like, just how much the offense has leveled up this year for, you know, potentially a variety of reasons. Coby just, I think, has to be that sort of high-volume shooter, and hopefully a more accurate shooter too, because, you know, similar to Markkanen, here's a guy with a reputation of being like a really good shooter. It hasn't really borne out in the numbers yet. So when people talk about what Coby needs to improve on, obviously he needs to improve his ball handling. He needs to improve his decision making. He needs to improve his strength. He needs to become a more impactful defensive player all around, and a higher IQ player. So he has quite a bit to work on, but he also needs to just get better at what he's supposed to be good at in the first place, which is shooting three. So I think we did see that vision in the final month, 2 months of the season. He had a 58% true shooting percentage, which is a tick above league average this year in April. So I think he was a little better after the trade deadline, but as you alluded to, I don't think by any means he's someone you should be like pinning your hopes and dreams to heading into next season, especially during a year that is going to be like really critical just in terms of the judgment of Karnišovas. Like, is this guy actually going to be a significant upgrade over Garpax, or is it kind of going to be more the same old Reinsdorfian bullshit that we've gotten used to over the last few years? So I think that's really interesting about Coby, but you know, for your high-volume three-point shooters, you also want them to defend a little bit better than Coby White's capable of defending. And part of this is just physical, right? Like, he's not big or strong. He's someone who he's listed 6'5", but I think he has shorter arms. He has a shorter wingspan than his height. He's, you know, he certainly plays with no force and plays with no power on the court. In terms of attacking the basket, I think that's one thing that limits him. You know, he's not someone who really plays through contact at a high level. So Coby's an interesting guy, because I can make an argument for him and against him really easily. The majority of the year, I thought that he was a pretty big disappointment. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of getting suckered in to the hot end of the season again, which the same shit happened last season, too. He was great to close the season, and then he sucked
right. The
majority of the season. So I don't know. There's a lot going on with Coby, and I really think he could go either way. But one thing I did want to say is that I do think that Vucevic's passing is a really pleasant surprise in sort of like how he can potentially serve as the hub of the offense.
Poor man's Jokic.
I wasn't fully sure of that going in to the trade. Like, I don't think I realized just how good of a passer Vucevic is, and he looked awesome. So maybe that is an avenue where Kobe can unlock a little bit more of his game.
Yeah, for sure.
Having like high volume 3-point shooters in Vucevic, LaVine, and Kobe White, like that's definitely intriguing, especially in today's NBA. But I mean, you have to question like whether that totally outweighs the. Can you have a starting lineup in the NBA where those three guys are on defense?
Yeah.
I mean, so your point of attack guys are going to be White and LaVine, and then Vucevic, I think, is actually not too terrible. I mean, you play him in the drop, and the Bulls became like a dominant defensive rebounding team when Vucevic came aboard, which helped their defense. I think they finished the year like 13 or something.
12 in defensive rating.
Which like blows my mind.
I don't know
if it was because LaVine got hurt at the end. It popped him up. But it's interesting to think like, well, maybe they can just like sell out and just go all offense and just start with those three guys just pumping up a ton of threes, and then the defense will kind of just, I mean, you'll try to get like some kind of wing stopper at two maybe, and then you have Thad Young as well as a good defensive player, and then maybe that, and then you kind of just say like, okay, the Chicago Bulls are going to be like a all offense 3-point shooting like extravaganza, and we'll just try to be like average to slightly below average on defense, and maybe that can work.
It'd be fun at least.
Yeah,
it would.
Yeah.
I'll take it. We could use some fun basketball because it has not been fun for these last 4 years. Okay, let's move to Patrick Williams, and that he's obviously his development will be a big key to next season. We have talked about how we were surprised that he got, and I mean, you mentioned earlier this year about the development thing, him getting the starting role right away over Otto Porter Jr. I know Otto's awful and doesn't play, and he's just fat now. what did you call him again? Your nickname for him?
Oh man, Otto Portley. That was one.
That was it. Otto Portley. That was it. Yes.
And another one was Otto Porter Jr. Bacon Cheeseburger.
Oh my God. But yeah, Patrick Williams started right away.
They could bring him back.
Oh yeah, there you go. and he showed some nice things. Like he was like offensively, if you look at those like shooting percentages, they were like steady the entire year. Like his mid-range was good. His three-point shot was like around 38-39%, but obviously the volume was the issue.
Yeah, the usage, right.
He very hesitant. Every night Stacey King's talking about Patrick Williams should be the third option. He needs to be more aggressive, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, they talked about it after the season, that Billy Donovan's talked to him about it. He brought it up. I don't know if that's something just coaching, whether that's his mindset. I do kind of understand his mindset coming, being like the sixth man from Florida State. Just like, that's not really like his thing. That's something he'll have to grow into. So I guess just, did you like that decision to start him right away? And like, did you like giving him those assignments, like all those defensive assignments? He was taking on LeBron. He was taking on Giannis. He was taking on Kawhi. He was guarding Devin Booker like at points of the season. Like, I feel like dudes he had like no business guarding. I mean, you like him embracing the challenge, and like he would always say the right things and all that. But I mean, they were obviously roasting him over and over. That he's a rookie, and this is really tough for a rookie. And we've kind of talked about like, is that the right way to go? Do you just throw him out there into that fire and give him those kind of reps against superstar players and just like let him sink or swim? And I mean, he had his moments. He had on both ends of the court. Like I said, his efficiency was decent. The low volume was low. He had some nice defensive plays. He showed some nice defensive instincts. Other times, he was getting roasted by stars. So did you like the way that Billy used Patrick Williams this season, and what do you think of him moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I like that he didn't like fall on his face, and like it wasn't like apparent ever this year that, oh, like Patrick Williams doesn't belong in the league. Even as young as he was still like belonged out there on the court on the starting lineup. So that's good. That's like a good like base to start with. I do think it does make you question the coaching and player development that Patrick Williams didn't really get better as the season went on. So that's concerning that they kind of just gave him these minutes and maintained them, and he never really improved, nor did he get more like aggressive or take more shots. And I hope it's not a case where he becomes like in his head about like, well, like coach told me like not to take that mid-range shot because I had those other players who should be taking that shot. I'm not sure that's the case yet. He's extremely young, so it's tough to say like, oh, this will like you know, ruin him for the future because he had like some struggles in his first season. But I do question that philosophy. It is a definite like philosophy, like whether it is, you know, whether you should just like throw them in to like soak up minutes. Part of it again is the whole perspective and like mindset of the franchise. Like going into the season by starting White and Williams, they were saying like we're not going to be that good. And then when they unsurprisingly weren't that good, and then made that trade for Vucevic, I was like, okay, now we're going to go for that playoff seed. So then it's like more questionable whether, you know, Williams should have been playing that much. If that's the goal of the team is to make the play-in game, maybe you do cut back on Williams' minutes. But again, as long as it doesn't affect him going forward, and I don't, it's tough to say like someone that young, it'll really like screw him up too badly to say like, well, you know, we threw you out there to get a ton of minutes, but we also like told you not to, you know, got it in your head, like, don't do this, don't do that. You know, keep that usage low. As long as he doesn't carry that into next year, it doesn't seem, and like you're saying, Jason, like he's saying the right things. He has that, like, he has that Gar Foreman grit mentality, it seems like. So that's all good. It'll just be like a case of whether he like works on his game in the off season. And then maybe he can become like a more high volume shooter because he'll be more comfortable taking those shots from 3-point range, and then won't have to worry about the mid range game. Like it'll open up from by virtue of his 3-point shooting. He should be able to get open. I'm assuming he's going to start next year, and so he'll have open looks like playing next to these guys. And so it'll be all about his confidence. Whether that, you know, the confidence from not just like Stacey King confidence where the shot goes in and you're confident. I'm saying like the confidence that he would get by improving his game to where he's more confident taking these shots in his second season, to where he can just hoist them up and then not worry about like coaching telling him not to. I said like I assume he's starting next year. Maybe that's not the case because if his long-term position is power forward, maybe you start Thad Young and Pat Williams is the backup power forward and you get like an actual wing, like stopper in free agency. And that's your small forward. What do you guys think about that?
What do you think about trading him is where I was going to go with this too.
Okay.
I think that, you know, that's, he's probably their best trade chip. You got to think.
Yeah, right? He is definitely.
And so I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I like Pat. I think that, man, like looking at it now though, and I was a proponent of Pat. I wasn't a big Halliburton guy at the time, but he would have been, they do sort of need that like connecting piece between Zach and Vooch. So he probably would have been a good pick, but we'll see what happens with Pat. I mean, Pat could certainly end up as a better player than Halliburton still, even though Halliburton had a better rookie year. So I think it's really interesting with Pat. I like him more near the rim. That's all I'm going to say about his defense. I think the young Kawhi comparisons have been such a curse on him because, like, defensively, it's just not the same skill set. Kawhi was such a monster perimeter defender. I mean, how many players in our lifetime have drawn worthy Scottie Pippen comparisons in terms of being a perimeter defender? Not many.
Well, there's Chandler Hutchison.
These are non-safe.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Pat's value is as providing like secondary rim protection, and it's as you know, sort of being able to force turnovers in the middle of the floor. I don't think it's really like shadowing the best players in the league, and he got that role just because like he's the same size as those guys. Someone's got to do it. Right. They didn't really have anyone else on
like
the
by default. Yeah.
But I mean, it's been tough for Pat. I want to see him play a little bit more on the ball. And the best thing that could possibly happen to him is that if he's going to stay on this team is that he can just become a more confident shooter, because you're not going to get to dribble the ball too much when you're playing with Vucevic and Levine. So whatever Pat thinks he can be in his head, that might be different than the role he's going to be best at in the Bulls for next season when he's 20. As you've mentioned, he seems like a good team first player or whatever. I like hate myself for even saying
that.
He does seem like that to a certain extent. So I'm excited about Pat, but I think he's absolutely on the table in the trade this year. I don't know.
It all speaks to like the whole timeline with his team. Like you mentioned, you know, they drafted Williams over Halliburton because they wanted, you know, they wanted the young high upside player, but now after the Vucevic acquisition, now they're not like that young developing team anymore. They're a team like in their with all-stars in their primes that you're looking for more players who can help immediately. So yeah, and Patrick Williams is so young, he's like decidedly not on that same timeline. I mean, his best years are probably, you know, 4 or 5 years from now. So and where Vuce will be off the team, or and maybe even like not even in the NBA at that point. So it's a tough decision for Karan Sovis. But it's definitely something that, you know, he's surprised. I think he surprised all of us with the Vuce trade in the first place. So we shouldn't assume that just because this is his first like draft pick, that Williams was his first draft pick, that he's like untouchable. I think you're right. I think it's definitely possible that he gets traded for someone who can help right now.
Everything he's done has been a surprise, quite frankly, yeah. And that's mostly because he works in silence. But yeah. When we got the news on our phone that they hired Billy Donovan, I think everyone was like, oh, my God, they got Billy Donovan. Yeah. Like, there wasn't any buzz about that. I'd say same thing with drafting Pat. Like, go back a week. I was writing about the draft every week. Never at any point did I think the Bulls were going to take
it. It was like a day or two the buzz started.
Yeah,
it
broke like the day before or something. Yeah.
But I still didn't even really believe it at that point. I'm like, Patrick Williams, like, yeah, I guess he's rising to seventh, so it makes sense to take him at four, I guess. But it was still just really surprising to see him that have that big of a leap, I think, in the post-draft process. And then obviously we were blindsided by the Vooch trade, blindsided by sending out Gafford, getting Tice and Troy Brown, who's hopefully a guy next year. His late season injury sort of took the shine off him. But at one point, he was looking like a guy where, like, as you mentioned about Javonte Green earlier, well, at least this guy can soak up minutes. Well, Troy Brown potentially can be that guy moving forward. They're in a tough spot. But one thing I want to ask, I don't know if Jason has anything else in mind, but the last thing I got for you, Matt, I will get people, my friends, come up to me and they're like, what's the problem with that guy? He's so negative. Now, people say that to me is pretty surprising because I'm super negative about the Bulls. But you have a way of just striking a chord in fans. So I'm going to ask you, Matt, what are you excited about for, I guess, this offseason or more importantly, next year? What are you excited about the team right now?
You mentioned how Karan Sovis works in silence, and I think the excitement is that we really don't know what he's going to do because he's only surprised us so far. I was definitely not excited after his first, his first act was getting rid of Boylan, and I think he like totally screwed it up. He eventually got rid of him, but I thought it was like a total fiasco that it took 2 months. And then his first off season was pretty terrible, I thought. But the trade deadline was, that was like a ballsy move by him. And it just spoke to that we really don't know what he's about. And I think like it's tough not to get in that trap where based off of like very little he says to the media and his past history with Denver, that we know like what type of executive he's going to be. I think a lot of it is like people covering the team just kind of assuming things about Karan Sovis because, he's European, he's going to, like, get a bunch of European players, or because he was with Denver, they're going to, like, work the second round and stuff. Like, we really don't know what he's going to do, so that's exciting in that so far all he's done is, like, big market, like, big balls type stuff. So if he continues with that, that would be that's something to look forward to, and I'm excited that I'm not, like, locking myself into, like, thinking it's the same old, because I really don't know what Karan Sovis is about, because he doesn't say anything, and he doesn't really do that much either until he does, and it's like really surprising. So there's still like that. There's always going to be that negativity because like ultimately like Reinsdorf's still there, and when talking about the back end of the roster, I wonder if that's like a Reinsdorf thing. I also am curious if. Part of the reason they got Vucevic and they traded so much for him was because he's a star that's not paid like one. He's only making like $20 million. It's like de-escalating. And I wondered like that was part of the sell job. It's like, well, we get an all-star and he's like paid like Zach LaVine. who's also like an underpaid all-star. Like maybe that was like a real like driving factor of like why they like targeted Vucevic as the guy to use all these assets for. So, I mean, like part of the negativity is that it's ultimately like a Reinsdorf production, and there's, you know, all that comes with that in terms of like cheapness and cronyism. But I think the excitement is, and being positive, is that Connor Schroeder, we really don't know what he's about. And I think when we read stuff about how, even what you're saying about like maybe trading Patrick Williams, I think like people who cover the team, they are assuming that Patrick Williams is off the table because Curtis Chauvis like values the draft or whatever, and this is his first draft pick. But we really don't actually know that about him because he's never had this job before. So maybe he is the kind of guy who just like punts all his first round picks and tries to get win now talent and realizes that, you know, stars win this league. The Chicago Bulls should be acquiring stars. I think what little he said, I was very disappointed in his end of season press conference.
It was very boring.
He's just a talker. Yeah, he's just a boring guy. He doesn't say much, and the media doesn't really like try to get much more out of him, which is also disappointing. But he did like say like we have, you know, part of the reason to get a second star was to get a third one, and we're going to try to get that third piece by, you know, leveraging the fact that we have two. Not talking, you know, not trying to say like, you know, we have flexibility, or, you know, we're going to try to make like smart targeted choices in free agency. He basically said like we want to get another star player, so that is exciting. So you can tell your friends that I'm excited about that.
I'll go a couple more. I'm excited to see a full season of Vooch. I thought Vooch was awesome.
Yeah,
I do think that they likely overpaid for him. They might have paid 120% for him with the picks, with Aminu. I do wonder, like, what if they were trading for Vooch this offseason? Like, if the Magic kept him, there's no way they're giving up two picks, Carter and taking back a bad contract. Like, I remember Carter Chauvis gave a midseason press conference, and one of his direct quotes was, well, with the play-in tournament, there's going to be a lot of teams that are desperate to get in because there's more availability to, you know, play meaningful basketball. Mm-hmm. The Bulls were the most desperate team, and I do applaud them for making it because it was a move Garpax never would have made, but they did. They paid quite a bit. So with that being said, though, Vooch rules. I mean, he's a very good player. He was super rock solid after they got him. 20-10 pretty much every night. I was worried his shooting might fall off because before the trade deadline, he was posting like 40% three-point shooting for the first time in his career on pretty high volume. I think a year before it was like 33%. There's a big difference in the NBA between, you know, a 33% shooter and a 40% shooter, especially as you raise the volume. But his shooting was better than ever when he got on the Bulls, so that's exciting. I don't think his defense was a total disaster. And, like, the Bulls haven't really had a player like him in, like, maybe my whole lifetime. Like, I guess Elton Brand would be the player who is most like him in terms of, like, inside scorer you can feed the ball to, and he's just going to get a bucket. And Noah was awesome. He was a top five MVP guy. He was not that level of player.
Going to diss Carlos Bulls, Boozer like that?
Well, I was going to say they thought they were getting that in Boozer, but Boozer kind of sucked.
How?
So how was sort of that in the extent.
Well,
sure.
neither went out to the 3-point line like Vucevic does. It like
yeah, not, definitely
insane,
not as much
like volume like you're saying. Yeah.
So I'm excited about Vooch. I'm excited about what the Zach Vooch pairing looks like because we're all. Obviously, it's going to be the foundational element of the team next year unless they add a player better than those two guys, which would be awesome. But we still don't really know what it looks like because LaVine missed so much time in the second half of the season. So I'm excited to see, like, can this shit work? Can you
have – it'll be exciting to have, like, an offense team, like an offense-first team. Like, we never see that with the Bulls where they, like, say, like, we're going to be, like, an, you know, forget – not so much forget defense, but, like, offense is going to carry us and not, like, this – we're going to have, like, one guy scoring the ball but try to have, like, a top five defense to carry us through. So that'll be exciting, too, just to have, you know, like, going with the trend of the league is, like, you know, threes, offense, ball movement, like, and just get up shots.
Right. I mean, the last few years, like, with the Hoiberg thing they tried, they said that they were going to do all that. And, like, but I don't think they've had a better offense than defense in a long time. Like, I feel like it's been a while. Like, this year, their offense, I think, was around 20th. And we saw that their defense was, like, 12th. Like, the offense was not good, even with, like, Zach going off. Even like I think that start of the year wasn't like that good. It was mediocre at best, even with Zach being so good, and obviously not having a lead guard probably played a role. So yeah, and I think even together, I didn't look towards the end of the year, but like before Zach got COVID, like the Zach Vooch minutes together, like their like on court like offensive rating was not good. And I think Zach just falling off offensively, and like it was just bad timing. Like I don't want to make excuses for him, but like they make the trade and they go on that West Coast trip. Zach clearly like could barely move out there. Like he was clearly just hurting. So like it will be nice to see them get that practice time and get a training camp together. And hopefully they add some other good parts in it. They should be, I think, a lot better offensively, and hopefully they'll actually have like maybe a top 10 offense or something like that. So. Yeah, I mean, I've said I'm decently excited for next season. I'm semi-optimistic. I think the expectation should be it should not be the play-in. The expectation should be to make the playoffs and get, whatever, 6-5, something like that. Maybe that's too much, but I think you got those two guys, and they should hopefully make other moves. I think those should be the expectations next season. If they fail to do that, I think that'd be disappointing. Obviously, if they were just a play-in team, I would take it. If they finish like 7th or 8th, sure, I'll take any type of postseason basketball at this point, but the expectations should be high. They're the Chicago Bulls, damn it. Big market, two all-stars on their team. They should be better.
Yeah, I mean, the league is good. I mean, there's lots of good players. Yeah. And so it'll be – they need a lot more – the Bulls need a lot more good players. So so hopefully, like, in this offseason, they need, like, 5 guys. And hopefully, like, Carter Silvers can come through and get like, one, like, star player and then nail, like, these minimum signings. Yeah. As much crap as I gave the Temple signing, it turned out to be a good signing. The problem was that was the only one, and he was relied upon like way too much.
But it shows
that he does that. That was an example of having a good eye for like marginal fringe talent. So maybe if they do use all their cap space on a big move, like maybe they can adequately fill it in with like the. Like smaller exceptions or the minimums and like have like more rotation players and then also nail your two-way signings, guys at the very end of the bench to like get some prospects in the pipeline to soak up minutes or trade for more guys. I mean, it has to be like a continuous up and down the roster type of effort. A lot of my like negativity towards the Bulls is that they just didn't show that effort. Like RPX, they were lazy, they were understaffed. I think Karnishevis like potentially could do more, and he has beefed up his staff a bit. But we'll have to see because he has a lot of work to do, and I want to see it like up and down the roster.
Yeah. Well, there should be a decent amount of turnover for sure. We talked about that in our recent pods. We want to see a good. I mean, at least 5, like you said, maybe even more. That'd be good. I got a few quick things at the end here. When we talk about trading Patrick Williams, somebody at Bloggable, and we talked about this on a recent pod as well, wrote a fan post about trading Patrick Williams for OG Anunoby. Did you read that? I don't know if you commented on that. I read through those comments a while ago, but would you do that trade?
I think there's a disclaimer at the bottom of the fan post to say that they do not express the opinion of me or the blog as a whole. It's just one commenter's opinion. Yeah. No, it's an interesting idea in that I don't think they would like specifically Anunoby, like the Raptors would give him up, but maybe they pivot to a rebuild and they would. I don't know.
We've also talked about Siakam, but the Bulls try to make a trade like that.
That's interesting. I mean, I think what was more interesting about that was the idea that, and we brought this up earlier. In this discussion was, you know, maybe point guard isn't the biggest need as much as a wing stopper or like a two-way wing player would be. And a lot of it could be just like who's the better option. You know, is Siakam or Anunoby better than Kyle Lowry? I mean, yeah, probably. Even if point guard is seen as like the bigger need, you could get away with, you know, start Kobe White at point guard, where he just like, you know, doesn't barely brings the ball up and just like launches a bunch of threes, but then you have like a two-way player on the wing, and that would benefit the team more to replace those Patrick Williams minutes with a two-way player in that position. So that's what I thought was interesting there. It was like not even so much targeting specifically Anunoby, but the idea of upgrading, not instead of focusing on upgrading from Kobe White to a point guard, upgrading from Patrick Williams to another wing player.
And my last general thoughts here, going back to the NBA playoffs, how much did you enjoy watching Chandler Hutchison shit on the Bulls and his TikTok exploits? And then can you believe Cameron Payne is playing better than I guess Chris Paul is obviously injured, but Cameron Payne almost, like, I don't want to say single-handedly, kind of kept the Suns in a game and almost helped them beat the Lakers last night with Chris Paul injured. Can you – so basically, Hutch, how hilarious is that whole situation? Like, and just, like, what the fuck is – what even happened with that? And then Cameron Payne, like, can you believe that he's actually, like, kind of good now? Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, this is just – this is like scrub corner. So now we're talking about scrubs of Bulls recent past. I just kind of, like, think about, like, okay, what – now, I don't – like, obviously, I don't fault the Bulls for getting rid of the campaign after he didn't work out. Like, not saying, like, oh, they should have kept him because he had this in him. But it is interesting, like, that the Suns could get something out of campaign, but the Bulls can't get something out of, like, any, not even necessarily Payne, but, like, anybody. Like, that's the example of someone who's signed for the minimum. Like, they're still young. So they're a project. Like, on the back end of the roster, you try them out, and it could potentially work out, like, where you're giving them playoff minutes, like, later in the season. Or it could work out, you know, where, like, Spencer Dinwiddie, where you just keep him on the roster, and then instead he goes to Brooklyn and blossoms. So I don't believe it in campaign. I would have never – I would have thought, like, he was, like, definitely the type who's not going to have, like, this kind of, like – it's not even a renaissance, because that would imply that he was once –
he was good once.
Yeah. I don't specifically – didn't specifically think it would happen with Payne, but it does speak to the idea that it could happen with somebody that they pick up off the fringes and not to – I think, like, a lot of fans, like, turn their nose up at, like, these fringe players in the back end of the roster because, like, you know, they don't move the needle. They're not going to make a difference when it comes to, like, a star or even, like, a role player off the bench. Like, these guys at the end don't make a difference, but they, you know
– sometimes they do.
You try, and then, like, a rare occasion, it does work out.
You get Fred VanVleet. He was undrafted, right? And he helps see the Raptors win a title.
Yeah, these things can happen. Yeah. And, like, you know, and back to, like, the selling of the second-round pick that became Jordan Bell. I mean, Jordan Bell did not pan out, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't worth it to make a pick. And that's
we talked about Dylan Brooks.
Dylan Brooks.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And then so now Hutchison, another guy. That's an example. I mean, not to harp. I mean, Garpax is gone. They're buried. Don't have to harp on them. But that was an example of organizational laziness that they, like, punted on scouting and promised Hutchison, like, a month before the draft, just so they wouldn't have to work hard, I guess, and, like, try and find someone else. But I don't. So with Hutch at. Yeah, it's annoying that he's, like, trying to, like, stunt on the Bulls that he, like, got some minutes at the end of the season. I'm all for, like, crapping on the Bulls. Like, that's fine. I've made a
I think it's funny.
I wouldn't say a living off it, but I made a secondary hobby off of it. But what I don't get is, like, clearly the organization had his back for this whole personal issues thing that made him not play the last, like, 6 weeks he was on the team. I don't know why he would be offended by the Bulls trading him if they were also giving him this leeway to, like, not play. He hasn't said what it was. I initially thought it was something like, you know, minutes or his role. He was just mad about it. And yeah. To which, you know, then it's, like, fair to crap on him if that's what it was. But his repeated insistence that it's not, and people who would know, like beat reporters, are not reporting on it, implying that it is something like not pertaining to basketball. I would hope they wouldn't, like, sit on it if it was basketball related. That would just be egregious. That it was something personal. Okay, fine. So then why are you like upset at the Bulls for trading you if they also were fine with, you know, they obviously helped him through this in some way by, like, they even let him, like, hang around the team, whatever was going on with them. So I don't know why he would, like, then, like, turn on them and say, well, I can't believe you guys traded me. If it did turn out to be, like, some menace thing, the Bulls should come out and say, like, they should, like, say as, like, a retort back to him, like, well, by the way, you sat out for personal reasons because you couldn't get playing time. It's just really weird that he would be against the team that traded him that also like allowed him to just not play for unspecified personal reasons for weeks.
Yeah. I hope that's the last time we ever talk about Chandler Hutchinson on the podcast. I really do.
Tonight he was, I believe he was 1 of 4, minus 17. The Wizards lost by 25 points, and Russell Westbrook got popcorn dumped on his head by an idiot Philly fan. So great night for the Wizards. Ricky, I think we should probably wrap it up here, right? You got anything else?
Yeah, I'm good.
Matt, we'll let you shout out your lovely website and your Twitter account and whatever, anything else you want to.
It's been a pretty dormant week, but bloggable.com, go there. It's going to be a big off season. We're going to have stuff about everything. The draft, free agency, we're going to have lots and lots of posts. And I'm genuinely excited going into this off season. So hopefully that comes through in the writing. Maybe people will miss like my rants about why they have to fire everybody. But I think writing positively about team, if they do positive stuff, I'll write positive things.
Right, exactly. Like a lot of people complain, why don't you be more positive? It's like, if they do good shit, we'll say good shit. But if they're garbage and trash, we're going to fucking say they're garbage and trash. It's that simple. Yep. So like, I guess you did mention, I know you wrote about the draft pick thing. There was, and you kind of mentioned it at the top, the lottery tiebreakers, the Bulls did get to the 8th spot between like the Pelicans and Kings. Doesn't really matter for them. Does not change the lottery odds to move in the top 4 or get number 1 at all. They're still 20.3% to keep the pick, still 4.5% to get number 1. I believe it did have something to do with the second rounders, though.
So there's also a tiebreaker for the second round, and quickly, I know we're at the end here, but the winner of the tiebreaker in the first round was the loser in the second round, so they flip it in the second round. So the Bulls actually got the lowest of those three in the second round, but they owned a pick swap with the Pelicans, who ironically were that like first in that grouping, back from the Mirotić trade when they traded Nico to New Orleans. So they actually, the Bulls got the 40th selection, but through this pick swap, they're back up to 38. So there you go. They got the 38th pick.
38th pick again.
Garpax's pick board dries up at 38. I'm not sure how current services will go. Hopefully it does not.
I would hope not. They took Jokic, 46? They'll get the next Jokic at 38 this year, right?
There you go.
We're still waiting on, what's his name, Marko Simonovic?
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is. He'll take Lowry's spot in a few years. All right, yeah, we'll wrap it up now. We went for a while here. That was good stuff, though. Matt, thank you, as always. Always great to have you on. Good timing for it at the end of a disappointing bowl season, but we are kind of excited, kind of. I'll say we're kind of excited for the off season and for the next bowl season. So thank you again for us here at Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls Pod. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network. With the playoffs going on, tons of great pods and all that great stuff. NBA coverage across the Blue Wire Network. For us at Cash, please rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. On Twitter, I'm at Bulls_J. Ricky is at SBN_Ricky. So thanks again to Matt for joining us. And we will talk to you guys next time. Obviously, the playoffs going on. A lot of fun games going on. And go Knicks, as horrible as that is to say. But it's been a fun series. A lot of fun games going on. So we'll talk to you guys next time.